Abe had gone hunting. It was a cold, clear night, and the lights flickered like tiny diamonds all over the outskirts of what had once been the powerful ville of Seattle. Trader had been scouting down there a couple of times, finding what he expected to find. Like virtually every other of the larger pre-dark urban sprawls, the ruins of Seattle were a killing ground for freaks and muty butchers. The topless towers with shattered windows loomed over cross streets filled with the rubble of the ancient nukings. Norms rarely strayed into those pockets of paranoid violence, unless they sought something that they couldn't get anyplace else, which normally meant either jolt or bizarre sex. The quest for either could seriously damage the health. Trader had gone out of curiosity, mingled with his own natural arrogance that there was nowhere in Deathlands where Trader feared to set his foot.
Never has been and never will be.
Abe had accompanied him along the meanest of streets, covering his old leader's back, his stainless steel Colt Python questing at every twitching shadow. It was late evening now, with a coolish breeze coming off the Pacific. Trader had lost track of the days, something that he'd noticed seemed to be happening a lot more recently than it had in the old days. He still wore a weather-beaten crown on his wrist, won it in a poker game from a one-legged whore in Chimay. Barbie? Or was it Barbara? Abe had only been gone for about an hour, after some of the plentiful deer that roamed the hills. It crossed Trader's mind to wonder what was happening to the dozens of messages that they'd sent on their way through the breadth and length of Deathlands. The wording had faded a little from his mind, but the gist of it was that Abe had tracked down the trader, proved he was alive, confirming the trickle of rumors that had begun within weeks of his fake disappearance.
No, not faked. That's not the right word. I meant it. I didn't want to be found.
The message had gone with every merchant and packman that he and Abe had been able to find anywhere in the vicinity of old Seattle. The message had told of the success and warned that they would stay around that part of the Northwest for 3 months, urging speed and responding to the warning. Maybe Ryan Carter hadn't got the message. Maybe he didn't care. Maybe he was dead, propping up 6.5 feet of cold earth.
No.
Trader realized his bottle of mezcal was empty and lobbed it away into the blackness, waiting for the satisfying tinkle of broken glass. But there was no sound at all. The bottle must have landed in a bed of soft moss. Ryan wouldn't be dead, nor would JB. Neither of them was capable of dying, no more than Trader himself.
Live forever.
He was suddenly aware that his tongue had grown a little too large for his mouth. The liquor was burning at the ulcer that had plagued him for years, as if 50 red ants were biting all at once. Unbidden, an image of the face of Ryan Carter swam into Trader's mind. The unruly hair, dark and curling, tumbling down over the one good eye, an eye of chillingly pale blue. The puckered scar seaming the right cheek from mouth to eye. The black patch tied over the missing left eye, destroyed many years ago by Ryan's older brother, Harvey. The lips, thin and cruel, capable of both humor and compassion.
The son I never had.
Trader nodded owlishly. In all of his rangings and dealings, he had always wanted Ryan to inherit his power. But things just hadn't turned out that way. No point in anyone weeping over the past, over all the roads and choices not taken. The hillside to both right and left of Trader's camp had once been scattered with expensive housing, aimed at the upwardly mobile young businessmen and women of Seattle. It had taken only one Russian nuke, slightly off target, confused by the defensive comp scrambler system, to wipe the slopes clear, taking off roofs and folding the walls in like so many cardboard dominoes. The heat flash carbonized flesh, blood, and bone into a human-shaped smear on a garage door, melting glass and window frames, and turning the sand and play pits into rippled glass, exploding the Saabs and BMWs and Volvos in the manicured drives. Now there was hardly any sign that there had once been a community of little boxes among the woods. In the first few days that Abe and Trader had been hunting and camping in the hills above the ville, they'd been approached by a number of the locals, sounding them out. Who were they? What were they doing? The locals explained that there were dues to be paid for being on someone else's land. Trader had done some explaining back, using his well-worn armalite to emphasize some of his more obvious points. Now Trader lay down flat on his back, nodding his fingers behind his head, aware of the broken knuckles on both hands. Relics from his early teen days when it was fists before knives. Before blasters.
Where I step, the flowers die.
He was suddenly feeling tired. The awareness that he wasn't as young as he used to be had come to him very gradually, beginning several years ago. A couple of kids had been enlisted into Warwag II as general gophers. Neither was more than 17. One had been part Kiowa and the other black. The Wags had been camping by a large nameless lake, someplace up in the Rockies. The crews had been relaxing, skimming stones across the placid, mirrored water. Trader had always been the best at it, selecting flat, round pebbles, snapping them away underarm, watching them bounce 15 or 20 times. That evening, the two newcomers had both easily outthrown him. Trader flexed his shoulders, remembering how he'd tried to do better. The spirit had been goddamn willing, but the flesh was treacherously weak.
Where did they...
He tried to recall what had happened to those two boys.
Judd and Skip.
Poor Judd was certainly dead. And for some reason, a strange melody played in Trader's head as he recalled this. The boy's throat had been cut by a muti woman in the back room of a store cum gaudy west of the Mohawk Gap. Skip had
just vanished.
Like so many of the faceless names and the nameless faces from the long years of the past, just vanished. The fire was dying, and Trader sat up again, breaking some of the thicker kindling across his knee and tossing it into the heart of the embers, where it quickly flamed and crackled, bringing a wave of fresh heat. Part of him was deeply unhappy that Little Abe had managed to track him through his self-imposed exile, deep into the Cascades, while another, smaller part of him was sort of flattered and pleased. And it might be good to meet up once more with Ryan and John Dix.
What?
Trader picked up the Armalite. Cause and effect blurred in the lightning speed of his combat reflexes, reacting so fast that he didn't even realize that he'd moved.
Come on, then.
Nothing happened, and the noise wasn't repeated. The trader still cradled his beloved blaster.
Yeah. See now some days, friend.
He patted the butt of the Armalite very gently, with the flat of his right hand.
We never let each other down, have we?
The dreams were continuing. Last night he'd been running desperately, arms pumping, along a winding path, between impenetrable walls of damp, dripping pine trees, trying to make it to a certain agreed rendezvous before the Warwags pulled out. It wasn't like some other nightmares, where one of the faceless, nameless things was pursuing him along dusty corridors through ruined shopping malls. This time there was no pursuit, just racing against time. Trader had somehow known in his dream that he was impelled to run beyond his breaking point. Yet it was all totally futile. However fast he sprinted, on his burning feet of fire, the Warwags would always pull out a minute or so before he reached them, leaving him to stand and shout, emptying his blaster into the sullen sky, seeing the blue-gray of their exhausts as they lumbered off along the deserted blacktop. It would all be for nothing.
Waste of fucking time.
He looked down at the Armalite.
Waste of fucking time, friend.
Trader slowly lay down again. All the pain, all the injuries. Mentally, he ticked off where each one came from, each blade and bullet, each fall and fight. More years of blood and toil than anyone could imagine. The pain in his lower stomach was particularly bad that evening, and he hoped that Abe wouldn't be too long with his kill. Even a rabbit or a squirrel would be welcome to ease the sharp discomfort he felt. Trader closed his eyes, resting for a few moments, keeping all his fighting senses alert.
Shit!
Abe had narrowly missed a clear shot at a resting roe deer, at the side of a stream noisy enough to cover the sounds of his own tracking. Then he'd seen the light of another fire in an abandoned line shack up near the top of the next hill along. It seemed safer to wait it out and not run the risk of attracting attention. When Abe eventually returned to his campsite, the fire was almost out, with just a thin column of watery smoke rising into the air. As Abe dropped the rabbit in the dirt, he noticed that Trader was sleeping like a baby. JB pointed with the Uzi at the notice above the doors that led to the service area of the caverns, private. Positively no entry to any members of the public. Service, staff, stores, and company parking. All passes must be shown.
We get the message.
Ryan glanced around at the Navajo.
We are ready.
Ryan and the armorer slid back the bolts and turned the keys in the powerful locks. There was a faint feeling of resistance, but everything seemed to be working. Jack was so eager to get through that he was pushing against Ryan.
Slow and easy.
There was a deeper darkness on the far side, but some of the weak golden light from the emergency system spilled through the gap between the doors. Ryan was first to peer into the tunnel beyond. It wasn't unlike looking into the heart of one of the passages that lay at the heart of most redoubts. A roughly curved roof, the walls hewed from living rock. There were no lights in that section, so that it was possible to see only for about a dozen yards.
Beware the Minotaur.
Fire blast, Doc. My nerves are tight enough without you coming whispering in my ear, you double stoop.
My dear fellow, I'm so sorry. It was just that the scene beyond yon portals put me most fearfully in mind of artists' representations of the great maze of Crete, controlled by the followers of Minos. Wherein did dwell the fabled and murderous Minotaur?
What was that?
It had the body of a man, but the head of a ferocious bull, my dear. And it slew the poor souls that became lost within that dread labyrinth.
The elder of our tribe tells us of this monster. Is it true?
It might perchance have been true once. Legend tells that the labyrinth was built by, let me see, by Daedalus, I believe. And the monster was eventually slain by the brave hero Theseus.
With all the mutants crawling around this place, it might be true now.
True enough, dear Dr. Wyeth.
So the bull is dead?
Oh my goodness, yes. We may find other monsters in these pitchy depths, but I can guarantee that none of them is likely to be the Minotaur.
Come on, follow close. We'll stop every 30 steps or so to listen for danger.
The stone was cold to the touch, slick in places with damp. A couple of times Ryan found his hand brushing against some sort of fungus, sticky against his skin, disintegrating into a stinking cloud of spores.
Shit. Hey, Jack?
What, Ryan?
I can feel some fresh air from way ahead. Tastes sagebrush, so it's coming from outside.
Can smell it. There's triple dim light as well. Want me to go first?
Sure, but take it slow. We can't all see in the dark like you can, Jack.
Jack took the lead, Ryan close behind. Then came Christy and Mildred, followed by Doc, with JB bringing up his favorite rearguard position for the Anglos. The Navajo huddled along a few paces behind.
Do you think they're frightened of the General Lover?
No. From what I know about them, it'd take a lot more than the General to scare them. No. It's the dark and the fear that there might be hostile spirits that are bothering them. If we can get through to the action, then they'll be fine.
It's getting lighter. I can see Jack's hair ahead.
It's getting wider, too. I feel someone close, Lover. I can't tell where they are, but it's close.
Hey, Jack. Christy's feeling something. Watch your ass.
Right.
Looking ahead to the teenager, Ryan was aware that it was considerably lighter now. The roof glistened, and he could see how the tunnel curved to the right. Jack held up a pale hand, stopping everyone.
Ryan!
Coming.
Voices!
Ryan strained to hear, but couldn't. He nodded to Jack anyway. The albino made a delicate gesture with his right hand to indicate that he thought they were just around the corner. The time for hiding and waiting was nearly over. Trader used to insist that when you had to go in against a hostile vill, you went in with everything, as hard and fast as you possibly could. No point in holding anything back in reserve for the next day, because the next day might never come. Ryan knelt and eased himself forward, pressing his face flat against the slippery walls of the tunnel, until he could squint around with his good right eye and see what was farther along the passage. It was an open space about 40 feet across that looked, from the ingrained oily stains on the stone floor, like it might once have been used as a motor pool. Now it was brightly lit.
With such a small pestle, how's he supposed to grind the millet? Stupid asshole.
Looky here, I got what you need.
Don't flatter yourself.
There were shelves lining the sides of the room, half filled with cans and bottles. Ryan's guess was that they'd stumbled upon a section of the General's larder. Jack tugged at Ryan's jacket.
Who?
Nobody in sight, but I can hear voices and a generator. And there's a wag engine going. Reckon we must be inside the defensive perimeter for the base. JB, sleeps in day.
Coming, one eye.
No other way in. We passed no side turnings or doors that I saw.
Nor me.
JB peeked around the corner.
We should go straight in. If we lose, then it will be with honor.
I'd rather win without honor. Staying alive and winning come to the same thing.
Dark night. When you said that, you sounded just like traitor.
Is that a compliment?
Well, yeah, I guess it is.
What do you reckon the old bastard would do if he was here now?
Go straight in with all blasters firing.
Probably would. Then again, traitor had the armaments and the number of trained fighters to take out most Baron sec forces. We don't have that.
So?
So we go in all right, but a mite more careful than traitor would have been.
Can't we stop and eat? This is relatively recently canned food.
You sound like Dean, Mildred. Do the business first, then think about eating.
The woman's singing had stopped somewhere ahead of them. The large room had obviously once been a meeting of the three main passages. One had a rusting door locked across it, with a notice warning of unsurveyed caves. The second one was dark, while the third one, on the right, was brightly lit, and seemed to lead in the direction of the cavern's rear.
That one.
The tunnel curved a little. Ryan again hesitated. He held up the Sig Sauer and turned to face the rest of the group.
Wait.
Thomas Firemaker and Two Dogs Fighting glanced at each other, holding their blasters at the hip. Christy sensed it first. She opened her mouth, her eyes wide with alarm.
No! Don't!
The two warriors charged forward, brushing past Ryan's belated attempt to stop them.
Shit! Where are they going?
Fire blast! Come on, people!
Ryan didn't go rushing toward the skirmish. He simply walked quickly the few paces that brought him around the bend in the vaulted passage and saw almost precisely what he'd expected. The bodies of the two Native Americans, blood-sodden, one of them still kicking his feet in his death throes. Ryan couldn't recognize which one it was, as their faces had been torn away by the bullets from the Kalashnikov assault rifles held by the three men standing in the center of the tunnel. There was a fourth man kneeling, hand pressed to a bloody wound in his left shoulder. All of them looked as though they had been born south of the Grandy, and all wore the black uniforms of the general's men. A red stripe down the pant leg was the only splash of color, from the black berets to the black steel-tipped boots. Part of Ryan's combat mind analyzed the fact that the quartet had done extremely well to kill the two Navajo as quickly and efficiently as they had, since the attack must have come as a total surprise. But the main part of Ryan's brain was concerned with taking out the armed man as fast as possible. The passage wasn't all that wide, and J.B. Dix, at his heels with the Uzi, wasn't able to open fire immediately. The AKs began to swivel toward Ryan as soon as he appeared.
Shit!
He dropped to one knee, aiming the Sig Sauer. Two of the general's men spun away, dropping their guns. But the third dove to one side, trying for the cover of a pile of old packing cases, firing as he went down. The fourth wounded man was no immediate threat and didn't enter into the equation.
Fire blast.
But the general's man had already used some of the 30-round mag on the two dead Navajo.
Stay down, Ryan.
JB now brought the Uzi into play. The powerful submachine gun had a fire rate of 650 rounds per minute at a muzzle velocity of around 400 meters per second. The armorer poured half a mag into the pile of boxes. As the boxes fell, a body flopped lifelessly to the side, the Kalashnikov dropping to the stone floor.
Mierda. I need no compadres.
Not your lucky day, is it?
As good a day as any.
Right.
Ryan put a single full metal jacket round through the head of the helpless kneeling man. Nobody else had a chance to fire. The remaining six Navajos stood in the stillness, looking in disbelief at their two dead comrades and the four corpses of the general's men. The air was smoky, tasting of cordite.
They died well and very bravely. Four of the enemy to accompany them into the dark beyond.
You fucking moron! They died pointlessly and could have gotten us all chilled. They might as well have swallowed their own blasters for all the good they did. I took out three and JB wasted the other one. Your people died for fucking nothing.
Sleeps in Day drew a broad-bladed knife from his belt and thrust it toward the white man's stomach. Ryan saw the attack coming and took a step back, shooting him once through the center of his chest. The powerful handgun kicked him three staggering paces backward until he tripped over his own feet and went down, dropping his gun.
What the fuck, Ryan?
The other five Navajo stood paralyzed at the shockingly sudden burst of violence upon violence. Ryan covered them with the Sig Sauer.
Don't make it worse.
No time for talk. Shooting will bring men like blowflies to fresh horse shit. Ryan, we might have to be...
Young Pony Run started to lift his single-shot musket.
You have no honor!
Yes.
Ryan, JB, and Jack were ready. They opened fire almost together in a devastating explosion of death, delivered at point-blank range.
Someone coming this way, fast.
Doc stood motionless, his jaw gaping, the ponderous Lama drooping in his right hand, pointing toward the crimson floor.
That was most thoroughly damnable, Mr. Cawdor.
Later, Doc.
Jesus, that was so fucked up.
Mildred was also ignored. The far end of the killing ground was obscured by a tall metal cabinet. A figure appeared around it, and then vanished before anyone could get off a shot. Ryan had a snatched image of blonde hair and very pink cheeks, but the woman's reflexes were in good shape, and she escaped.
Intruders! Intruders!
That's it. Now they know we're here. Shit and fan together.
Ryan, that was simply murder to shoot down those poor bastards like that.
Christy was as pale as ivory. Her green eyes narrowed in anger. JB ran forward, pausing by the cabinet at the angle of the passage.
Wrong! No choice, Christy.
No choice? God damn it, there's always a choice.
Ryan was following the armorer.
The chief tried to stab me. I chilled him. General's men were seconds away. I figured that Young Pony Runs and the others might slap metal. They did. The rest was
silence.
Yeah, just shut the fuck up, Custer.